Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, everyone. Welcome to Revolution Radio. It is Wednesday, June 9th, and I have a confession to make. It's my birthday in a couple of days. John F. Kennedy said that those who make peaceful revolution impossible will make violent revolution inevitable. And I just heard a quote from Claire Wolf passed on in my blog, Dr. Kate's View, that America is at an awkward place. It's too late to work within the system, and it's too early to shoot the bastards. In my blog, I've been working on a couple of issues that have kind of astounded me yet once again in terms of the scale of what we're doing. And the last piece that I wrote, which was a dream, was really the need to have an absolute stop work situation where we absolutely demand Obama's resignation because of his lack of eligibility. There are so many issues going on right now that it is a distraction from that fundamental base issue. And then, of course, last night on the Chalice show, General Vallely, I believe that's the way you pronounce the name, has outright called for the resignation the first time, you know, aside from those people who have filed lawsuits have actually outright called for that. I listened to the show last night, and you know, I think the idea of a mass vote of no confidence is excellent. We know that First Amendment petitions are not working, nor are Article 4 or 5 petitions working, but something mass, something national, and something supported by our military would be essential. I think one of the questions last night that wasn't answered was, who in a situation like this really has the authority to investigate Obama? And of course, I'm coming to the place myself that it has to be the Joint Chiefs of Staff, but are they too worried about the stars on their shoulders as opposed to, you know, the star that is America? We're not perfect, but there is no reason why we should go down the tubes. So believe me, I'm getting to a point here, because then I started doing some research and getting just most alarmed about the BP spill, and most alarmed about the toxicity of the, quote, cleanup, unquote, dispersant they're using, airborne, and statements coming out of certain people that I respect and admire that this is really an extinction event in the globe, in the Gulf of Mexico. And, of course, it's the extinction of life there, marine life. It's unbelievable. But also the people and the economies. My older brother has noticed some tarballs on Cape Cod. People have noticed this off the coast beyond Florida right now. And there are blobs of stuff in the water that is either the dispersant or the oil itself. It's unbelievable. I saw a video today that showed the underwater dispersal of the oil, and it's just the most incredible disaster. We know that we are not getting the full information. So with all of these things in mind tonight, I really would like to start taking a new course now that the Third Continental Congress is up and running, and there are going to be more directions to civic actions. And now that we really have analyzed everything, we kind of have this advanced knowledge of what the heck is going on here. No, we don't know everything, but we know. I'd like to actually now start focusing on both seeing through some of the stuff that's out there, but also absolutely taking some action. We have those of you who are listening know that we have a Stop Them Cold webinar coming up, and the focus of this is to really have a private conversation about what we can do to stop them cold. So in any case, this is kind of a preview of this discussion that's coming up, and also tonight I hope that we have some other people coming in, particularly Dan Gonzalez, the president of the Continental Congress, and the Florida resident who has been working on this. He had a show just momentarily. It just finished up, and I hope he comes on where he's been talking about this issue as well. So tonight, before I start on the BP thing, I really would like to read to you a very astute article that came out today. Those of you who have read it on my blog, I apologize, but this is really quite amazing. It's by Dorothy Rabinowitz in the Wall Street Journal Online. And, you know, I'm going to take a peek in the chat room here and welcome everyone. Good evening. Has everyone heard or seen this article today called The Alien in the White House? If you have and don't want me to read it, just, you know, drop me an icon in the chat room, and if you'd like me to read it, I will just go ahead and do so. So I'll give you like 2 seconds. Okay, hearing no objection, I'm going to go ahead and read it. It's called The Alien in the White House Today, Wall Street Online, Dorothy Rabinowitz. Excuse me. The deepening notes of disenchantment with Barack Obama now issuing from commentators across the political spectrum were predictable. So, too, were the charges from some of the president's earliest enthusiasts about his failure to reflect a powerful sense of urgency about the oil spill. There should have been nothing puzzling about his response to anyone who has paid even modest critical attention to Mr. Obama's pronouncements, for it was clear from the first that this president, single-minded, ever visible, confident in his program for a reformed America saved from darkness by his arrival, was wanting in certain qualities citizens have now taken for granted in their presidents, namely a tone and a presence that said, "This is America's leader, a man of them, for them, the nation's voice and champion." Mr. Obama wasn't lacking in concern about the oil spill. What he lacked was that voice, and for good reason. Those qualities to be expected in the present were never about rhetoric. Obama had proved himself a dab hand at that at the campaign trail. They were a matter of identification with the nation and to all that binds its people together in pride and allegiance. These are feelings held deep in American hearts, unvoiced mostly, but unmistakably there and not on the 4th of July. Not just on the 4th of July. A great part of America now understands that this president's sense of identification lies elsewhere and is in profound ways unlike theirs. He is hard put to sound convincingly like a leader of the nation because he is, at heart and by instinct, the voice mainly of its ideological class. He is an alien in the White House, a matter having nothing to do with delusions about his birthplace cherished by a demented fringe. How's about that? I didn't spot that one in the article, but in any case, one of his first reforms was to rid the White House of the bust of Winston Churchill, a gift from Tony Blair, by packing it off to 10 Downing Street. A cloudlet of mystery has surrounded the subject ever since, but the central fact stands clear. The new administration had apparently found no place in our national house of many rooms for the British leader who lives on so vividly in the American mind. Churchill, face of our shared wartime struggle, dauntless rallier of his nation who continues so remarkably to speak to ours. For a president to whom such associations are alien, ridding the White House of Churchill would, of course, have raised no second thoughts. Far greater strangeness has since flowed steadily from Washington. The president's appointees, transmitters of policy, go forth with singular passion week after week, delivering the latest inversion of reality. Their work is not easy, focused as it is on a current prime preoccupation of this White House, that is, finding ways to avoid any public mention of the indisputable Islamic identity of the enemy at war with us. No small trick that, but their efforts go forward in public spectacles matchless in their absurdity, unnerving in what they confirm about our current guardians of law and national security. Hang on 1 second, please. Excuse me. Consider the hapless Eric Holder, America's Attorney General, confronting the question put to him by Representative Lamar Smith, R. Texas, of the House Judiciary Committee on May 13th. Did Mr. Holder think that in the last three terrorist attempts on this soil, one of them successful, Major Nadal Hassan's murder of 13 soldiers at Fort Hood, preceded by his shout of "Allahu Akbar," that radical Islam might have played a role at all? Mr. Holder seemed puzzled by the question. "People have different reasons," he finally answered, a response he repeated three times. He didn't want, quote, to say anything negative about religion, unquote. And who can forget the exhortations on jihad by John Brennan, Mr. Obama's chief advisor on counterterrorism? Mr. Brennan has in the past charged that Americans lack sensitivity to the Muslim world, and that we have particularly failed to credit its peace-loving disposition. In the May 26 speech at the Center for Strategic and International Studies, Mr. Brennan held forth fervently, if not quite comprehensively, on who our enemy was not. Our enemy is not terrorism because terrorism is just a tactic. Our enemy is not terror because terror is a state of mind. And as Americans, we refuse to live in fear. He went on to announce sternly that we do not refer to our enemies as Islamists or jihadists because jihad is a holy struggle, a, quote, legitimate tenet of Islam. How then might we be permitted to describe our enemies? One hint comes from another of Mr. Brennan's pronouncements in that speech, that, quote, violent extremists are victims of political, economic, and social forces, unquote. Oh, yes, that would work. Consider the news bulletins we could have read. Quote, police have arrested Faisal Shahzad, victim of political, economic, and social forces living in Connecticut, for efforts to set off a car bomb explosion in Times Square, unquote. Plotters in Afghanistan and Yemen, preparing for their next attempt at mass murder in America, could only have listened in wonderment. They must have marveled in particular on learning that this was the chief counterterrorism advisor to the President of the United States. Long after Obama leaves office, it will be this parade of explicators, laboring mightily to sell each new piece of official reality revisionism. Janet Napolitano and her immortal, quote, man-caused disasters, unquote, among them, that will stand most memorably as the face of this administration. It is a White House that is focused consistently on the sensitivities of the world community, as it is euphemistically known, a body which the President of the United States frequently appears to view himself as a representative at large. It is what has caused this president and his counterterrorism brain trust to deem it acceptable to insult Americans with nonsensical evasions concerning the enemy we face. It is this focus that has caused Mr. Holder to insist on holding the trial of Khalid Sheikh Mohammed in Lower Manhattan, despite the rage this decision induced in New Yorkers, and later to insist, if not there, then elsewhere in New York. This was all to be a dazzling exhibition for that world community, proof of Mr. Obama's moral reclamation program and that America has been delivered from the darkness of the Bush years. It is why this administration tapped officials like Michael Posner, Assistant Secretary of State for Democracy, Human Rights, and Labor. Among his better-known contributions to political discourse was a 2005 address in which he compared the treatment of Muslim Americans in the United States after 9/11 with the plight of Japanese Americans interned in camps after Pearl Harbor. During a human rights conference held in China this May, Mr. Posner cited the new Arizona immigration law by way of assuring the Chinese, those exemplary guardians of freedom, that the United States too had its problems with discrimination. So there we are, America and China, in the same boat on human rights, two buddies struggling for reform. For this view of reality, which brought withering criticism in Congress and calls for his resignation, Mr. Posner has been roundly embraced in the State Department as a superbly effective representative. It is no surprise that Mr. Posner, like numerous of his kind, has found a natural home in this administration. His is a sensibility and political disposition with which Mr. Obama is at home. The beliefs and attitudes that this president has internalized are to be found everywhere, in the salons of the left the world over, and, above all, in the academic establishment, stuffed with tenured radicals and their political progeny. The places where it is held as revealed truth that the United States is now, and has been throughout its history, the chief engine of injustice and oppression in the world. Let me read that again. In academia, the places where it is held and revealed that the truth that the United States is now and has been throughout history, the chief engine of injustice and oppression in the world. There are attitudes to be found everywhere, but never before in a president of the United States. Mr. Obama may not hold it all, or the more extreme of these views, but there can be no doubt by now of the influences that have shaped him. the account for his grand apology tour through the capitals of Europe into the Muslim world, during which he decried America's moral failures, her arrogance, insensitivity. They were the words of a man to whom reasons for American guilt came naturally. Americans were shocked by this behavior in their newly elected president, but he was telling them something from those lecterns in foreign lands, something about his distant relation to the country he was about to lead. The truth about that distance is now sinking in, which is all to the good. A country governed by leaders too principled to speak the name of its mortal enemy needs every infusion of reality it can get. What a great article. It is sinking in? What do you think? Do you think it is sinking in? I think so. It is astounding. I just wonder if we're over the shock factor yet of this. I'm not sure we are. So I'll be right back, and we will move right into British Petroleum. It's that time, patriots. We've analyzed, we've looked at everything, we know what's going on, we know who's illegal, who's not, how they set this up, we know they're laughing at us, and now it's time to do something about this. The BP issue, let me just back up a second. Well, I'll talk with you about that in a minute. There have been lots of reports when the BP event happened, of it being a terrorist event or some other kind of sabotage. Alex Jones and Paul Watson have come up with other information that begins to look like this was a false flag information. Some similar stuff that happened to right before 9/11, people, you know, selling shares of things like that. Now, I want to just caution, because there is a lot of misinformation out there, as you know, on both sides. There are a lot of people who do make their money on sensationalism and scaring people. And I'm not saying this about Alex Jones or anybody that I'm about to read or talk about. And on the other hand, there's deliberate information, misinformation out there designed to discredit us, just like the recent videotape of the supposed elections clerk in Honolulu in 2008 who said that, you know, Obama, there's no information there. Well, you've got to ask yourself, why now? You've got to look at that video and wonder, what's the deal with the white supremacy symbolism in the background? And you got to wonder about information like that. Now, thank goodness we are all sophisticated and we know that, and we ask that question first before everything goes out. But this is, as you know, a very rough game. You know, it's life and death. It's not a game. And the BP incident, unfortunately, fits in right to it. Look again, once again, we're looking somewhere else besides his lack of eligibility. There's a big trial coming up. There, Lakin is having a hearing, so forth and so on. People, you know, 60% of Americans want to know who he is, and more than 60% want him out if he's found to be ineligible. And we have the mechanisms. We know that. So what is this about a false flag? I'm going to read this. I have not checked out and determined, you know, the validity of all that I'm about to read right now. I'm not going to do that. There's a reason for doing this, and I will point this out as we move forward. here's just a brief summary from the Oil for Immigration site. BP as a false flag event. Sales of shares and stocks in the days and weeks beforehand. Indicators. There's a Halliburton link, acquisition of cleanup company days before the explosion. A BP report cites undocumented tampering with well sealing equipment. The government uses, and is using right now, this disaster to push for a carbon tax. There's actually a vote on that tomorrow in the House. And nationalization talk, i.e., quote, I would fire the BP executive and, quote, I'm going to, quote, kick some ass. Troubling evidence surrounding the Deepwater Horizon explosion on April 20th suggests that the incident could have been manufactured. On April 12th, just over 1 week before the Deepwater Horizon rig exploded, Halliburton, the world's second largest oil field services corporation, surprised some by acquiring Boots and Coots, a relatively small but vastly experienced oil well control company. The company deals with fires and blowouts on oil rigs and oil wells. It was responsible for putting out roughly one-third of the more than 700 well fires set in Kuwait before retreating Iraqi soldiers during the Gulf War. The deal itself is still under scrutiny, with Boots and Coots facing an ongoing investigation into, quote, possible breaches of fiduciary duty and other violations of state law. Have to find that state link. Where this information really gets interesting is the fact that, quote, that Halliburton is named in a majority of two dozen lawsuits filed since the explosion by Gulf Coast people and businesses who claim that the company is to blame for the disaster. Halliburton was forced to admit in testimony at a congressional hearing last month that it carried out a cementing operation 20 hours before the Gulf of Mexico rig went up in flames. The lawsuits claim that four Halliburton workers stationed on the rig improperly capped the well. As the New York Times noted on May 26, BP officials chose, partly for financial reasons, to use a type of casing for the well that the company knew was the riskier of two options. Workers from the rig and company officials have said that hours before the explosion, gases were leaking through the cement, which had been set in place by the oil services contractor Halliburton. Investigators have said that these leaks were the likely cause of the explosion. Again, remember, there's also a possibility that something else happened. That's my comment. Back to the article. According to a 2007 study by the Minerals Management Service, cementing was a factor in 18 of 39 rig blowouts in the Gulf between 1992 and 2006. Another intriguing connection to Boots and Coots has to the Deepwater Horizon explosion comes via Pat Campbell, the man BP employed to cap the well beneath the ruined rig. Campbell worked for Boots and Coots as a general manager for many years. BP has admitted to buying Yahoo and Google keywords in an attempt to control publicity available information in the wake of the catastrophe. It seems that the company is taking all the flack for the spill while Halliburton Link is still being roundly ignored. BP's prepared testimony briefing, which has since leaked online, also intriguingly notes that the hydraulic control system on the equipment designed to automatically seal the well in an emergency was modified without their knowledge sometime before the explosion. The extent of modifications is unknown at this time. Possible prior knowledge of the explosion is also evident via huge dumping of stocks and shares in the weeks and days prior to the incident. Goldman Sachs dumped 44% of its shares in BP Oil during the first quarter, shares that subsequently lost 36% of their value after the explosion, equating to $96 million. Other asset management firms also sold huge blocks of BP stock in the first quarter. Though the amounts pale in comparison to Goldman's holding, Wachovia, owned by Wells Fargo, sold 98% of its shares in BP, and Swiss bank UBS sold 97% of its BP shares. Furthermore, as reported by the London Telegraph on June 5th, Tony Hayward, the chief executive of BP, sold 1.4 million of his shares as in the fuel giant weeks before the spill. In the days before the Deepwater explosion, Obama had announced a new effort to explore for and lease drilling and lease new drilling locations in the Deep Gulf and in Alaska. In the wake of the disaster, these plans have been canceled, and BP is taking a PR bashing. Remember, Obama said he was going to kick ass. Guess whose ass he kicked? The drillers in the Gulf and America in terms of oil prices, gas prices, and so forth. All of which has been capitalized on by the Obama administration to reinvigorate talk of a carbon tax, and has created the opportunity to reintroduce the idea of nationalizing oil, which the Democratic leadership has long sought. The full story of what is happening in the Gulf of Mexico is yet to emerge. There are rumors of more spills and an ongoing cover-up. The site represents $2.2 trillion source of wealth and power, a motive along with a plethora of a suspicious activity that needs to be investigated further. Okay, now here's a comment to that story. I want to read a couple of other things. Post the explosion, there were a number of operations. They found a number of leaks on the system, errors, undocumented modifications, all kinds of things with the system. Here's a quote. Here's just a comment to this story from one of the readers. This is what I've learned. Unable to share source at this time. BP tapped into the channel connecting the Black Hills Reservoir and the Venezuelan Reservoir. If the well was completed, BP could claim right to all of the oil. BP knew Halliburton was planning on sinking a well very close by, so instead of waiting the mandated 72 hours to drill after concrete has been laid, BP only waited 5 hours. The bit snapped was able to be replaced and drilling restarted. The rest is history. The second part of the story is, remember the initial reports of military on the rig? Well, the men in black were ex-military, quote, Blackwater. 20 Blackwater operatives were in place on the rig, set explosive charges, and sunk the rig, eliminating any possibility BP could finish the well, and eliminating all of the evidence, of course. This explosion is said to cause massive damage to the ocean floor and created craters and damage to the wellhead. So, is it a false flag operation? What do you think? I'm looking in the chat room here. Let me suggest some other connections. Rahm Emanuel, Rambo, living 5 years in D.C. rent-free. That's no cheap thing. In an apartment owned by a colleague whose husband was a BP executive or consultant who was responsible for re-imaging BP into a, quote, green company. BP was one of the biggest contributors to Obama's campaign. There are all kinds of connections with the administration that may have, that certainly have impacted their response. Now, what has been their response? Kind of nothing. Send the military out there. I still don't know about that story, but I do know that some explosion happened after the initial explosion, and I'm not sure what the cause of it was. I also know that people are being kept out. The proper, quote, government authority peoples that should have gone there first were not sent there. It was the military and the Coast Guard. You probably heard the reports of miles of oil boom were sitting in a warehouse waiting to be picked up. Here we have Halliburton again and BP. Those two companies, very much, you know, on both sides of every conflict it seems. Brown and Root, which is, I think, a subsidiary of Halliburton, made the cages that they kept our POWs in Vietnam. Also, they made Agent Orange, and they made other things as well. Well, Monsanto, I think, made Agent Orange. But in any case, there are all these connections. So there was a story out, I believe, on Obama Release Your Records, to begin to do a RICO investigation of all these connections. Now, it's just almost sickening with glee that the Democrats are now, you know, stopping oil drilling and pushing for new caps and pushing for alternative energy, when in fact they may have created this situation themselves. So I am quite concerned. Now, the other thing that began to appear right after the April 20th explosion were a number of non-toxic videos on non-toxic ways to clean up the Gulf spill. Tenacity. The distraction was the North Koreans torpedoed the rig. That's what I heard. That's what I heard too. Likely false flag. So what I'm saying, and I've just wanted to relate this, I know you've seen this too, there are remarkable ways to clean this up. One of those is just simply straw, simply hay. And there's a remarkable video of two gentlemen, farmers, just total farmers, bowls of oil-drenched, stained, you know, filled water, dump the hay in there, stir it around, pull it out, the water is clear. Obviously, yes, there are other chemicals that are left, but that kind of bulk removing the oil, doesn't it make sense? I do that. What do you do when you spill oil on your garage floor? There are a bunch of things you do to clean the stuff up. Talking with Dan Gonzalez, and I'm sure he's quite busy right now, he is describing all of these efforts, all of these people coming to the Gulf Coast and being turned away. I said, Dan, we've got to have millions of people out on boats out there doing this. He said, you'll be arrested. They are not letting one. And basically, the clincher for me when he said it was just like Katrina. Remember when they herded a bunch of people into the dome where murders and rapes and, you know, crime was going on and was rampant? They took guns away from people. I heard on a Blog Talk Radio show two nights ago that the possible evacuation and of the Gulf Coast under military escort is possible here. It's an absolute ruination of what's going on here. And then someone in one of my blogs commented that that he had heard that in Texas there were emergency workers on their way under police escort to the coast. So no one's in charge. BP is allowed to spray this chemical, this dispersant that is more toxic than anything that can be imagined. Our government wrings its hands or alternatively says it's going to kick ass. Nothing is happening, and the people are dying, and the marine life is dying. Can you see this situation where we get so desperate we just demand the government get involved, and that then becomes the rationale for the complete takeover of all of that stuff? This is the Cloward-Piven. This is another aspect of the Cloward-Piven strategy. One is to overload institutions so they don't work, so you basically destroy the institutions. And the other is to drive us to the point of desperation, to the edge of the cliff, where we beg for national government intervention to fix the problem and to deal with it. So you can see what they're doing. I mean, Obama's lack of empathy is, you know, I don't think I'll ever get used to it, but the lackadaisical decadence with which she is allowing this to die is unbelievable. So I get to a point where I really want to do something about this. Seriously. Now, I've been talking for a lot of time. Allowing more offshore drilling. I'm just going to look in the chat room for a second here. No, I never believed the statement that Obama would allow more offshore drilling. It seems to have been some kind of setup. This is what I'm worried about, the dumping of shares, this kind of stuff. What is going on here? And Obama almost grinning about this. Was it sabotage? Is it false flag? Yes, you know, Rambo said that. Never let a good crisis go to waste. This is what they're doing. Every crisis they're using against us. I swear, when Obama says he's going to kick ass, I'm waiting for the boot. You know, where is he going to do that? One of my readers, before I take a little break here, said, John Boner suggests that Obama try ass-kicking on the national debt. Joseph Stalin Memorial at the National D-Day Memorial Ceremony this past Sunday in Bedford, Virginia. Memorial's officials unveiled a bust of the dictator Stalin. What is going on here? It's outrageous. It is a complete decadence. Okay, I'm going to take about a 5-minute break with Dave Brubeck's Take Five. And what I'm going to roll into next is some possible national actions that we can take. I'm thinking millions of people on the Gulf Coast. I'm thinking millions of bales of hay. And I'm thinking calling upon our military, our current and retired military, to protect citizens as we go out and we clean up that oil. Sound crazy? What should we do? Maybe we should talk about it? Okay, I'll be back in 5. Thank you. That was a short 5 minutes. Okay, so in the break here, I was thinking about what are we all going to go do? Go down there and get all toxic and poisoned by, you know, the oil stuff and you know, lose our battle for the biggest effort? What do you think? Can I have a caller in here who might want to talk about what are some obvious ways in which we can make an effort, aside from publicizing and demanding RICO investigations, not buying what they're saying, calling out what they're doing? Is this the right thing? You know, I think that everybody in this country, just like they responded to Katrina and the tsunami that happened in Indonesia, would gladly come forward with what they have. Hey, for the Gulf Coast, what do you think? Is there a caller out there who wants to do this? Okay, tenacity. Demand resignation and call for a vote of no confidence and new elections. Okay, so I can see where going after the Gulf Coast piece would actually just, again, be another diversion. And I recall again that my own dream, where the whole issue has to really be his eligibility and also the resignation of government. How do we do that? Okay, I'm not going to talk too much longer unless I can get my friend Tenacity on the line here. The thing about, look at what we have. The Restore America plan has not achieved anything? Did it come out too late, too early? Was it completely not drawn? Okay, I don't know if you have to press 1 if you're on Skype, but I will unmute you, okay? Here we go. Terry, are you there?
Yeah, I'm still dancing to that tune you just played.
I'll play it again if you'd like. I love that tune.
So, yes.
You heard the thing. You listened to the show, you heard what General Vallely said. And so what do you think? What are we doing here? Am I getting distracted just like maybe Alex Jones wants me to? Or, you know, or what's going on here?
Well, no, I believe that, Alex Jones didn't come out and say things without having some pretty good information. He doesn't always reveal everything that he has there. I object to his sensationalism at times, but it doesn't cause me to question what he's saying, because most of what he's always come out with, I've always been able to verify and eventually turned out to be true. It's like he said now. What he was saying 2 years ago, you're now hearing on CNN.
That's correct.
So
that's correct. And the things in this article are all, you know, again, quoted reputable sources and so forth, and they're easy to go after, too. You can look at the shares and so forth. So I didn't, you know, I don't mean to knock him, but I also am sensitive to the sensationalism, and I'm under a lot of stress myself right now, and I've just been calling people and freaking out because we have to do something. I'm not sure we can wait till November, Terry. So, hell.
What did Oil and Immigration have to say about this Tim Adams thing? I know they had something on there about it.
Has
anybody come out and either affirmed or disputed who he is?
They have not been able to verify that he was an election official. They have found him in St. Louis University somewhere in Missouri. So they have made contact with him, but everyone is saying until it's verified, it's a maybe. So what they're saying is it's all on Citizen Wells as well, that it's like a hoax and that we need to be careful. But Oil for Immigration, folks on there are going after it to find out who they are, who this guy is.
Well, I've heard a lot of revelations, and basically what got me really investigating things myself a couple of years ago was because of people who were out there lying and saying things, and I guess from that perspective, I found out a lot more than what they were lying about.
Mm-hmm.
But
mm-hmm.
We do have to just take a deep breath sometimes and do our homework, and we haven't quite had enough time on this one because it's so recent to check this one out. But I know Slim Jim in the chat room was asking about the Tim Adams things, and have we done any research? Well, we're working on it.
Yeah, Western Kentucky University, that's right. Yeah. Yeah. So what do you think? Given millions of people who supposedly have time, what can we do? We all have to work. I mean, what is it about the Gulf disaster that can inform us right now about our next steps? And if the next thing is with what the general spoke about, how do we do this? This is not another petition. How do we do this?
I can only really rely on my own observations, Kate, and my own observations say that these people are not incompetent. So when you see them doing things in an incompetent way, you need to recognize that it's not incompetent. They're doing exactly what they want to do. So, I mean, that in and of itself, to me, it comes back to the old thing about when you eliminate all of the things that are impossible, what's left is the truth. And I cannot buy that putting Corexit in the water and dispersing the oil to the point where nobody can gather it or fix the problem. There's too many things there that says to me, these people are criminal. And I think that we've got to be careful that we don't get this. We can look at this the same way we do the left-right debate. The whole thing is a smokescreen. And we need to keep focus. I mean, I really appreciated Pastor Manning's sermon last Sunday, because he revealed the truth of what our situation is. And we have to keep educating people. I spoke to a gentleman, and I'm hoping to have him on Walls in Our Minds either next week or the week after, hopefully next week. But he started up a new Tea Party in his area. He was active in a larger area Tea Party and then started up one in his own area. And he's a PhD, a post-hole digger like you are. And he's been out there talking to fairly intelligent people and asking them some very simple, elementary questions. And what he's finding is that people who are very, very knowledgeable about a lot of things, that are well-read people, cannot give the simplest of definitions of constitutional concepts. And so he's out there working the grassroots, and I think we've got to do that, and we've also got to do like it says in the book by Babbitts about the illusion of freedom that our good friend Mr. Skrill sent us. It says we need to focus on our states. We need to take control of our local areas. We need to get the right people into office. We need to make demands of legislation and of our sheriffs and our grand juries. We need to get a grip on things within the area within which we can control, and we need to have our states protect us from this federal god. this false federal god. And we need to get behind brave men and courageous people like General Valerie, who are out there, you know, calling for the resignation of this imposter. We've got to stay focused. We've got to keep the pressure on. We've got to educate more people. And more people have got to get off their couch, put down their remote control, and learn what it's going to take. I mean, we're in a situation where we're on the verge of breaking what's sufferable. We look at the Declaration of Independence in that second paragraph. I keep referring back to that because I believe it's so important. We've got to keep building relationships in our own community so that we can bring more people in. If one person will go out and bring in three, and we can get that movement going across the country, then we'll have enough people to take a stand with enough power that they will not be able to ignore us anymore. Think about the Tea Party right now. If the Tea Party were to multiply itself by three or four times, that would put us with a higher percentage of people ready to take a stand than we had in our original, than the percentages of people we had in our original revolution. But let's look at that key situation in that second paragraph of the Declaration of Independence. I'm flipping. I'll get there in a second because I don't know why. I haven't been very good at memorizing that verse. It says, prudence indeed will just dictate that governments long established should not be changed for light and transient causes, and accordingly, all experience has shown that mankind are more disposed to suffer while evils are sufferable than to right them by abolishing the forms to which they are accustomed. And that's because as long as it's less painful to not act than it is to act, people will not act. And we are approaching that level. People are, their ears are beginning to heal. They're beginning to hear the truth, because up until a couple of years ago, people didn't want to hear the truth. They just wanted to go to their jobs. They wanted to have their steak. They wanted to go to the movie and, you know, let their kids play video games. I mean, that's where America has gotten to. And we're no longer telling the story. We're no longer being mentors and recreating mentors in this country. We have stopped telling the story of America and the heritage, and we've allowed them to rewrite our history. We've allowed them, the tax-exempt foundations, to conspire and take over our schools. We've allowed them to incorporate our churches. We've allowed all this to happen, and we have become an impotent society. And now they have hurt us bad enough as a people, as a society, that people are beginning to open up their ears and believe and hear the truth. So we've got to take this opportunity, and we've got to reach out to three or four people, each one of us, just like Jesus did. Jesus set the example. He had three disciples that were close to him, and he had another dozen. He had a total of a dozen that were fairly close to him, but three that were very close. And that's what he built his church on. We've got to build a church here. That's what we've got to do. We've got to get enough people together that are willing to take a stand, that have accountability relationships with each other, that we can call upon and say it's time to take a stand, and we've got to stand up to these people, and we've got to get behind and beside people like General Valerie. That's what we've got to do, and we've got to take control of our states, and we've got to demand that our state acts like the sovereign that it was initially supposed to be and defend the people against this federal god. That's what we've got to do. So, yeah, is the Gulf oil thing a distraction? Yeah, it is. And all this disinformation, it's just like another left-right debate. It's just like, you know, the argument winning Democrats or the Republican who's going to win the Super Bowl. You know, it gives us, we can have little victories in all of this stuff, and we can complain, and, you know, we can let Glenn Beck do our bidding for us. That's not the way this is going to get cured. It's going to get cured by building relationships, every one of us that are in the know, that know the truth, that see it and know that it's time to take a stand, it's time to throw this government off, it's time to replace it with a new guard, just like our Constitution provides for. That's what we got to do. And we got to have the courage and the impetus to go out there with God going before us and His Spirit going before us and relate to some other people and build the foundation of the grassroots that we need to have the numbers to not be ignored. That's what we got to do.
Let me not.
Was I on my soapbox long enough?
Yeah, no, just move over and let me get on there for a little bit. But it becomes my soapbox then. No, I think that's right. I'm, you know, of course want to immediately resist because they think, you know, we don't have time to do this. And then I think, well, okay, what if everybody adopted, and I read this somewhere, a zip code in this country. Everyone adopted a zip code and focused on reaching those 2 to 3 people every day, not just, you know, not just over a week or, you know, something like that, and build that relationship there with those basic understandings. Because once you have that kind of coverage, if you will, then you have everybody engaged. And from there, I mean, that's the kind of thing I think that the general wants. You know, there's that. People can demand at their state level that protection. But what about the idea of a national vote of no confidence? How do you see those two ideas bridging, or what you've talked about? And this is just a discussion. I'm not putting you on the spot as far as coming up with the answer and, you know, this and that. But how do you see those things linking? Because I know you feel the same way many of us do. There's a real urgency here. We may not have till November. On the other hand, we don't want to give them an excuse to cancel any November elections. And we also know that beyond November, there is clearly much, much more work to do. We're not out of the woods. We're still in great danger. So with those concepts and timing in mind, how do you see that happening?
Well, we've got to take every opportunity, Kate. The reason I lift up Vallely is because he's got credibility. There are people who are beginning to stand up that have the credibility necessary to be heard, and it's inspiring to see somebody, you know, in his position that we can rally around. That people, you know, if I go out there and say it, you know, they're going to say, who is he? And I've said it a zillion times. You know, Red Beckman said it a zillion times. Dr. Edwin Vera said it a zillion times. How many times have you written about this in the last year and a half? I mean, the point is that we've got to, when we get somebody that's got some courage, we've got to rally around them, and we've got to push them forward. We've got to lift them up, and we've got to educate people. I mean, I'm sorry, but when you say you don't have time, what you're really saying is I'm going to give up. Because if we don't take that action, if we don't start and we don't create and act like mentors and bring other people to the game, then we're doomed. Because a bunch of people have already stood up and spoken. And, you know, we put out the Articles of Freedom and we've petitioned the government. We've done all these things. We know what that's going to lead to. It's going to lead to like a forest falling in a tree falling in a forest with nobody there. They're just going to ignore us. They're just going to keep doing their criminal acts. We've got to have enough people that we can take civic actions, that we've got enough people that it's difficult for them to come back and have any recourse against us for that civic action.
Mm-hmm.
That's what we got to do.
Mm-hmm.
And we've got to bring those people in. We've got to open it up. We've got to educate people. And without that grassroots effort, I'm here to tell you, we're going to get the same thing we've gotten up until now, and that is insane, expecting any different result from the same thing we've been doing.
Well, then, do you feel that there's an urgency? And how would you propose to address that? Or because I first react, you know, saying, of course I'm not going to give up. But I also Well, I also hear how that could be, how my statement could be said, and I also think that's sort of an affliction of, you know, our time, is that we want everything instantly. We want this stuff like right now. We don't have time to do everything. But you're right. If we don't do that basic stuff, well, then it's just the same as, you know, the guardians of the Free Republic taking over the whole country without anyone knowing what happened.
Let's think about what Red did last week. Red Beckman, I'm talking about.
Mm-hmm.
He gave the people in Montana an idea, and that idea right now is running rampant through Montana and Wyoming and Idaho about the wolves. He saw the wolves that are now creating serious problems for the ranchers as being a perfect opportunity for reinstating the concept of the jurors judging the law and not just the facts of the case. He got a hold of Elo Jones, and they're putting together stuff to put out in newspaper ads, just like they did some years ago when they revitalized their grand jury system up there in Montana. But using the wolf as opening a season, saying we're going to declare open season, the people are going to declare open season on those wolves, and we're going to defeat that, the extinct act, or what was it? I'm sorry, I have a mental block on what do you call that? That act where they Endangered Species Act.
Yeah, Endangered Species Act.
They're going to defeat that unconstitutional act by going out there and declaring open season on those wolves, and they're going to educate the people in their state so that if you're called as a juror, you're able to judge the law, and you do not convict anybody for shooting one of these wolves. So they're going to go out there and declare open season. They're going to go out there and they're going to kill the wolves, and they're going to dare them to call a jury together that'll convict anybody. That's the kind of thing that we need to do. We need to build those kind of grass fires out here that says to the federal government, you do not control us, and if you think you do, you're wrong, and we're going to show you. And take a stand. And that's a perfect example. We've got to build those kind of brush fires out here and use those opportunities to teach people about the Constitution and our unalienable rights that do not come from the Constitution. And we've got to do that. And it's work. Yeah, it takes time. Yeah, it doesn't happen like, you know, snap your fingers. It's not a silver bullet. But those are the kind of things we've got to do. And we've got to do it whether we have the time to do it or not. Is there a sense of urgency? We needed to have our people educated before they voted in this imposter, this person who is deliberately and willfully destroying our republic. So the urgency goes back to then. Did we have any time then? No, we didn't have time then. Is it accelerating now? Yes, it's accelerating. Do we need to do this tomorrow? Yeah, we need to do this tomorrow. Can we? No. Can. But we got to start, and we got to fight. And we can't think that petitioning them anymore is going to do any good, except in our local level. And
that's why I'm glad we're going to try to have the general on either one of our shows, because I got a distinct impression that he was thinking this was like now, it has to happen now, and was calling for this kind of nationwide no confidence now. And
what else could he do? What else could he do? Tell me what else he could do without breaking a law. He is in a position where at least him speaking out will inspire people.
Oh,
you know,
yes.
The man had open heart surgery, 10 days ago?
Yeah. No,
and
I
he's
wasn't
on a show.
This wasn't a critique. This was
well, I understand.
How do we do that? Yeah.
What I'm saying is that if he had the ability to go up there right now and physically throw those people out, he would do that. If he had enough people supporting him, I believe that he would lead the army that would go in there and take those people and put them under trial. They need to be convicted. They're criminals. And I believe that if he had the support to do that today, he would do that. But he's in a position that at least he's got credibility and he could speak out, and I commend him for doing at least that.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Now
and we need to rally around it.
Yep. Okay, well that gives me way better ideas, because I think that is essential. And the long term work, the education that you're talking about, that we're all talking about, that I said we don't have time, we have to have time. We will have to do that. But this also provides a thread for a lot more immediate action, if you will, if we can find him, get a way to support him, and basically get in line, whatever it is we have to do.
Is Dan online? Because he's in the chat room.
Oh, no, he's not. Oh, hi, Dan. No, he's not online, but good evening, Dan.
Let's throw the number in there, make sure he's got it handy.
Yeah. Dan, if you want to call in, it is 347-838-9176. Right, so this provides a little more satisfaction for me, because I'm sitting here freaking out knowing we have to do the long-term work and that it's not over, and at the same time seeing these things happen right and left.
We don't even know what day it will be affected. You know, something could happen that in 2 days from now, enough people could stand up and finally take a stand. Somebody could, they could finally find the courage and the impetus.
Yep.
But it won't happen if we don't keep talking about it, and if we don't start rallying around people like Valerie and others, like, you know, Judge Napolitano. And I mean, there's been a lot of people out there speaking. We've got to bring good numbers of people around them and lift them up. And we've got to really catapult off of what the Tea Party's doing. Does the Tea Party people have all the answers? No, they don't. But hey, at least they're doing something.
Welcome. Welcome, Dan. Welcome, Mr. President.
Hey, hello there, you bunch of troublemakers.
Well, in a minute, in the chat room, you were calling us, you know, saviors, and now you're calling us troublemakers when you get on the line?
Yeah, exactly. I said hello. Actually, in the chat room, I said hello, winners.
Oh, that's right. That's right.
Yes.
Unless you forgot to put the H in there.
Winers? No.
Well,
I don't think you guys are whining at all. I think you're speaking the truth, and you're just concerned. And I know that deep in your hearts you're concerned, and it bothers you to see this great country being brought to its knees. And we all feel the same way. I mean, on my program tonight, American Politics 101, you know, we were just really, you know, I get into that like, come on, you bunch of wimps, stand up and save your country. What's wrong with you? Can't you, you know, don't you have any fight in you at all? I mean, what in the world is wrong with you people? And I don't know. I asked Terry tonight, I said, do you think that America has the intestinal fortitude to take our liberty back, to win it back? Because it's going to take a fight, no doubt about it.
And what was that answer?
Yeah. Oh, sorry, what?
And Terry, what do you think? This is sort of what we're talking about tonight in terms of there's so many distractions and, you know, how do we focus and really move this? Of course, the long-term work is essential. But what are the things? What are the things right now?
Well, I know Terry probably knows what they are, has an idea. You know, I wrote something on the Constitution Party of Florida website, cpflorida.com, I wrote on there I said these are the I forget how many divisions, six divisions, seven divisions of our lives, areas of our lives that are completely co-opted by the enemy. Our monetary system, our education system, our energy, of course we can see that going on right now, there are other ones in there that I can't recall off the top of my head right now. But
I hope
there are
Religious
other areas.
Foundation was in there.
That, well, that
I hope
would
religious,
be,
Religious Foundation needed to be in there.
Yeah, Religious Foundation, but that would be kind of like education. I don't know. Maybe it could have be all by itself. But the other one is the would be our entertainment. Everything that we do, we're entertained by. Think about it: the boob tube, the radio, the movies are made in Hollywood and everywhere else. You know, look at how we're entertained. Even the communists knew that they needed to come here and entertain us and get our minds off of the true problem. You know, to distract us, sort of like, you know, the circus in Rome. Same concept. It worked for a while, but then eventually Rome imploded because nobody was working. No one was doing anything. They were no longer producing. They were lazy, complacent individuals who just wanted more and more and more. And that's what our, you know, no personal responsibility. Our government has educated our children to not take personal responsibility. It's not my fault. I don't have to do that. I don't want to work. Let me go on welfare, get a good government job so I can sit around and do nothing all day. Not that all government employees do nothing all day, but I'll tell you what, government, if you've ever worked in government, you know exactly what I'm talking about. And don't tell me you don't, because you do.
I do. I do.
Yes.
I know exactly what you're talking about.
You bet. And it's like working for a union, only worse. The unions were real bad also. You know, don't work. When I was a young man and I was out in the workforce and I got into a trade and I was, you know, I believed in working my way to the top. And they said to me, don't do that, kid. What's the matter with you? We're not working that hard. Don't you work that hard, because then they'll expect more out of us. Slow down. Stop it. And I actually had to. Got into fights with people, with guys, men. I was young. I was 18, 19 years old, and we actually got into fights because they wanted me to slow down. And I said, take a flying leap. I'll run this company one day. You can stay on the line and do what you want to do, but I'm going to be running this company. And I'm going to work hard for it. And they said, no, you're not. And we would actually get into a fight. It's really rough. And that's the way.
Dan, just so you know, Dan, when I was 18 and 19 years old, I'd worked I was going to school, but during the summers, I was working for Kroger Warehouse, which is a union shop. And
right.
there was a group of us who were going in there, and we were hard workers. We were aggressive, and the management loved us. But I had to wear a wooden billy stick up my jacket sleeve to get in and out of that warehouse, and I had a shotgun in the trunk of my car.
Wow! Yeah.
And I did have to pull it.
There you go. That's what I'm
they
talking
beat up,
about.
They beat up one of my friends, and then they tried to beat up another one, but they ended up getting beat up. And then a group of them followed me to my car, and I was watching for them. So I rushed to my car, whipped out the shotgun, slung it up into position. You know how you snap a shotgun up? It was a breakdown kind of shotgun. And I snapped it up and set it on my thigh and said, "Now what have you got to say to me?" That's the kind of crap that we're fighting right now. That kind of attitude. These people, you know, are nuts, and
yeah.
You know they want to accuse us of being what they are. Because they're criminal, and we've got that kind of mentality in our government.
How many times in our life have you heard people say that's impossible? You can't do that. That's impossible. You're not going to be able to do that. That's not the way it's done. It's impossible to do that. You're just a big dreamer. But remember Joseph, how his brothers in the Bible, the Old Testament, sold him into slavery, into Egypt. Remember? How he went to Egypt, and then he ended up running Egypt. And they said they saw Joseph coming one time, and they were conspiring against him. They said, oh, behold, the dreamer cometh. Because all great things happen with dreams, start with a thought, with a great thought, a thought of doing better, being better, accomplishing more, giving back more than you ever thought you could. And it all happens with a dream. It all happens with a thought in our mind. And And what these people do is they try to cover that thought up, that dream. They try to take that dream and snuff it out. That's what they do. And I worked with them for many years, and I know. And I still have them around me. But the only thing is, I'm much older and wiser now, so I can look them in the eye now with a huge amount of confidence and look at them and say, "You're dead wrong. You're dead wrong. And you go ahead and you stay in your mediocrity, but I'm plowing ahead. You may think we can never win our liberty back. I believe that we can. You may think that this is the way it is. Don't fight City Hall, kid." How many times did you hear that? "You can't fight City Hall, kid." Really? Is that right? Well, then I guess I just better shut my mouth, stand here like you do, work every day like a slave, and be used by a master. I'm sorry. That just isn't the way I was made. Praise the Lord for that, right, Terry? Right, Dr. Kate?
Amen.
Absolutely. Yes.
Yeah, and I would say to a guy, you know, I remember, where I grew up, it was rough. And I remember those guys who talk rough and tough, big mouth, always shooting their mouth off. The minute they got hit in the mouth, they turned around and ran the other way with tears coming out of their eyes. You know, I saw those big, rough, tough guys. We saw them at CC 2009. I'll die for liberty. One moment they're on the podium, and the next day they're packing their bags and they're going, "Where are you going? I'll be out of here, man. Homeland Security's on their way. See you later. I got to get out of here." You know? Yeah.
I remember that.
Yeah, I roomed with one of them. I actually wasted almost a whole day trying to find out if he was dead or alive, because he actually left without his clothes and luggage. Yeah.
Oh, goodness.
Wow. Would you like to have him standing shoulder to shoulder with you trying to save your family's life or something? Can you imagine?
No, and you know, maybe that's what this time is about, because I've been down all night. I've been complaining about, you know, their urgency and, you know, the hard work that needs to be done, the long-term stuff, and also the urgency that we have right now. And I was wondering if you had heard of General Vallely. Is that how you say it? And what you think, because we have begun to focus on that a little bit here as one of those actions. What do you think? Yeah.
You mean the general talking about arresting the usurper and
having the government resign?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I'm
a national vote of no confidence.
You know, I'm in favor of that. Are you kidding me? I'd be the first one to stand up and say, "I'm right with you, brother." In fact, I say it all the time.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's time to throw these bums out completely. But see, Terry mentioned the Tea Party organization, but I got to tell you, you know, I'm not impressed with the Tea Parties anymore. It's sort of like I wasn't really in the beginning either, because I immediately saw the Republican takeover of the Tea Party, the leadership of the Tea Party movement being Freedom Works, headed up by Dick Armey, a Republican usurper. And, of course, Dick Armey is the actually the congressman who wrote up and got the Patriot Act passed, or no, the Department of Homeland Security in Congress. So, wow, wasn't that a great thing that he did? He helped create and get it passed in Congress, the Department of Homeland Security, the modern-day Gestapo. And here he is heading up the Tea Party in the big million march, or the big meeting up there in D.C., and he's the one who helped implement the Department of Homeland Security. The Department of Homeland Security declared Dan Gonzalez a possible terrorist. You don't want to know why? Because I believe in God's absolute word. I am against abortion. I am against homosexuality. And I belong to a third party. And I also believe in the Second Amendment means exactly what it says. So I'm a potential terrorist. And that's the Department of Homeland Security. So that's what Dick Armey created. Now, how can he be the lead or the head of the Tea Party, the big movement up there in D.C. and waving the flag of liberty? You know, "Oh, yeah, I'm right with you guys." What does that tell us? I think it says a lot. It says a lot. America, Americans right now, you know, it says in God's holy word, that we will think we're wise, men will think they're wise, and they are really ignorant. Man's wisdom is foolish, you know, and that we'll be destroyed because of our own arrogance and our own self-imposed wisdom. I'm just paraphrasing it now. There is only one true wisdom, and that is that that comes only from God, and only God can reveal the truth. And the fact is, if you're not in submission to God, you don't know what's going on. I'm sorry. If you don't pray every day that His will be done in your life every day and give your life to Him every single day, then I have to question whether you know what you're talking about.
Whoa, what amazing. This has just been amazing. And we have about 1 minute left, gentlemen. Terry, some last words. Dan, very inspiring. Some last words from you.
Well, I got my soapbox time in earlier. I'm going to let Dan finish it up.
Okay.
No, Terry. You didn't get any soapbox time. You're just preaching the truth, brother. That's all. And
well,
I,
Dan,
and I
we're...
enjoy.
We're going to try to have the general on the show and would love to have you on when we do so. And
well, that would be wonderful.
I want to get Tim Harrington on.
Exactly.
That would be really great to hear the general come on and hear him talk about it. You know, we need to hear the knights. We need for men to stand up like El Cid did, like Charlton Heston did in El Cid, the movie El Cid. Remember that movie?
Mm-hmm.
Remember El Cid, he would not change for any man. He would only follow God. His heart was for God. He would not do anything against God's will, no matter if it even cost him his life. And he honored God, and he ended up dying in the end, but many, many people were awakened because of him, because of his faith. Faith, that's it.
Thank you. And with that,
amen.
God bless you. Amen.
God bless you.
God
hey,
bless
listen,
you all.
I love
Thanks.
And respect all of you. You guys are awesome.
Thank you all. Good night.
Good night, everyone.
Good night.
Thanks, Kate.